In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Welcome to episode 76 of the In Tech We Trust podcast, and woot woot woot, we've got a full house. Woo!
Hey!
So, that is Mark Farley, Gabriel Chapman, Rick Vanover, Lauren Malhoit, and Nigel Poulton.
Mm.
Woo! There you go. What was that noise for?
Nigel.
Somebody's hungry.
It's like a cow. Anyway, so Gabriel and Rick, you're at some like massive Uber conference, right? And you're right next to each other among 40,000 people, yeah?
Yes. Two is booths right next to each other. Seriously, like we're both in the back corner. Because unlike other conferences where you just kind of you're trying to do lead gen and traffic gathering by, you know, people walk by the booth, this one here at NetApp, which has a fairly significant presence in the healthcare vertical, we have 60 VIP meetings lined up one after another in two little conference rooms we have here on the floor, and it's been pretty amazing.
Tell the listeners, though, about some of the things you were just telling us before, like what kind of
the biggest trade show booths I've ever seen in my life, with fireplaces and waterfalls and conference rooms that are bigger. Like, seriously, the one for Epic is bigger than the Solid Fire building.
So you're like in the corner of shame, right at the back next to the toilet. Yeah, this is where the IT guys go, and they've got like some kind
of... Well, no, you know, it's actually kind of an interesting conference because all of the normal players are here, like from a technology standpoint. So Dell has a booth, and IBM, and HP, you know, and Cisco, and all of them. But it's all dedicated to their engagement in the healthcare information system space. So there's a lot of talk around Cerner and Epic and the different health management tools and analytics and big data play really big here, and Internet of Things is starting to make an encroachment into this space as well. And there's everything here from robots, which I've seen, like patient robot, to little stands that hold your iPad in the hospital bed. So it's everything you could possibly think of technology related to the healthcare industry.
I saw this basically a sample hospital in one of these spaces. Like, you know, this one space that Gabe was describing was 50 meters by 50 meters, like, or 50 Rickatron steps by 50 Rickatron steps. Yeah. And I've never seen like a exhibit space like that. I wouldn't even know how you would operate that as a vendor. I mean, it's bigger than what VMware has at VMworld, bigger than what Microsoft has at Ignite, bigger than what's, well, maybe not bigger than what Cisco has at Cisco Live.
No, Cisco Live is the only thing I've seen that's actually got more vendor-dedicated space, but that's all because it's just Cisco. My favorite was the hospital beds. Like, there's like three or four hospital bed manufacturers, and they just had people laying in the beds, like, all day. I'm like, how'd you get that gig? I'm like, normally I have to stand, but you can just lay in the bed and sell it. It's awesome.
Hey, man, he's giving a demo. That's what he's doing.
It's like, wait, are they like boot babes in the bed?
Yeah, there was a lady and a guy, and they were in the bed, and they were like, you know,
what?
Kind of, they were like, no, they're separate beds, right? But they were next
were they
to
around
each other,
the fireplace?
And is the booth babe dressed in a nurse's outfit?
These were in like, you know, like the same thing a patient would wear, except they had like a probably long underwear underneath because it's not super warm in here. But
yeah, was there a backside?
Don't know. They were under the covers. Who knows what happens under the covers? You have to wait till after that. Like, when you,
everyone's in suits also. I mean, I literally had to dress up. I almost went and bought a tie.
Do you have a suit jacket on?
Yes, I'm Executron today.
Can't you just wear a t-shirt with the tie painted on?
That's so
I wore my tuxedo t-shirt.
Yeah.
Because it says I'm kind of formal, but I'm also here to party.
Hey, what are the parties like at an event like that?
Better drugs.
Laura. Better drugs. Nailed it.
Parties, you know, I haven't been to one yet, but from what I can gather, it is the same level of trade show debauchery that every party-based event is. Funnily enough, I saw the Nutanix guys had an entire restaurant locked out for a party last night. All the restaurants are completely booked around the Sands and Venetian, so it's like impossible to get something to eat. I had to go to Delmonico's and just have a bowl of soup for dinner. I felt really bad.
I can see the headline for the show now. Gabe goes to soup kitchen at healthcare.
Delmonico's where it's like $60 for like a basic very entry level steak. It was like, all right, Amaral, thanks, dude. Here's my $12 bowl of gumbo and my $14 potato chips.
What have we got to talk about this week? Cisco. Right, so Cisco cozying up with SpringPath. That one's interesting. We just mentioned Nutanix there. Brocade and Emulex getting on the 32 gigabits per second fiber channel bandwagon. Oh, VMware president and CEO bails for Sequoia, so leaving for a VC firm. Dell's apparently named, I think, or there was a press release about the team who's going to run the new Uber business if the feds let it go through. And what else did we have? Cisco announces their intent to buy Clicker as well. Now, on that one, actually, Lauren, you did tell me on the back channels that you have booth-babed for Clicker. So you are the resident authority on that. Obviously, we don't expect you to comment on the ins and outs of the deal. But on that one, actually, what a Clicker do? Because I haven't got a clue.
Yeah, so Clicker is a cloud management tool, basically, provisioning entire applications really through kind of a self-service portal. So you literally just point and click on, I want to deploy this application, and it will deploy it either on-premises, maybe using Cisco ACI. Of course, that's what I was booth-babing with Clicker, or, you know, out in AWS or Microsoft Azure, whatever. So it kind of takes in that hybridity, if you will, like we heard at VMworld. But it automates application deployment, essentially.
So I think just in the news, it was saying their intent to acquire them for $260 million. I should have done this before, but I'm just going to Crunchbase Clicker. How do you even spell that? Is it C? Oh, there you go. I've got it.
It's a big Q.
It is a big Q. Not the
just the way you would normally spell Clicker, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Why do people do that? And mind you, I suppose
the Z is silent.
Gone. Yeah. So here we go. $38.4 million in three rounds from five investors. Oh, and it's already saying acquired by Cisco on March the 1st. I thought that it was just intent acquired, but no, apparently they have acquired them. So $260 million after taking $38 million in venture capital. That's not too shabby.
It's a nice return.
It is.
Yeah, they've been working with us for a while now, too, and that's public knowledge. So we've had a really close relationship, especially in my BU, the NCMA BU.
So do they come into your BU?
Yes, they've been here for a long time. They have contractor badges and all that good stuff, so I assume they'll all get rolled in and become the infamous blue badge full-time.
Yeah, when I was at Cisco, we were very interested. At least the teams that I was working with were very interested in Clicker and what they could do, and it was kind of like, when does Cisco buy them? Because they really do have a product that kind of integrates well with some of the space that they wanted to go into. And a lot of the CSE engineers I would work with a lot, they're like, dude, you got to check this out. It's the bomb. It's apparently Cisco listened to them.
Now, coming into the cloud business at Cisco, does Cisco have a viable public cloud business? Because we were talking just the other week about, I think, IBM SoftLayer creeping up behind the scenes and almost putting itself on an even keel with the likes of Microsoft Azure and people. Are Cisco aiming for the same kind of thing? And if they are, have they got any chance?
No.
That's something we're working on. We did
the
acquire Meta,
no.
Meta Cloud, but I will refrain from saying yes or no. Gabe's obviously got his opinion.
Initially, you go back 24 months or so, and your cloud fabric was supposed to be this kind of foray into that space, brokering cloud services between various players like, you know, IBM and others. I don't know if it ever really took off or got a lot of traction. I do know that some of those services have been, I guess, sold to some customers and leveraged, and that the internal InterCloud Fabric group still does kind of what we would traditionally call public cloud or hybrid cloud services. But I definitely don't think it's a strong suit. And when it comes to Metapod, that product there, though, that's managed OpenStack, and that's a service sold per socket to customers for, you know, and we've had really good traction with the Metapod team because we get a lot of organizations out there that look at OpenStack as something they would like to do in-house, and they're spending $400,000 a month on AWS and want that kind of experience internally. And in turn, you know, they can pay a flat fee to have somebody kind of build, manage, and deploy for them and get that level of agility internally until they can build up the skill set in order to carry over the management of that. So I see that being a much more successful play myself And I think organizations like IBM do as well, because that's, you know, they pick up Blue Box and integrate that with Bluemix and that particular end of thing, as well as this. But the software stuff has been really successful. But the integrations with VMware and everything else, you know, they're really expanding those particular space.
So I've got two questions around that then. So the managed OpenStack business, okay, yes, it can be more successful and it's pretty cool technology and stuff. I get that. But number one, can that be a sizable business unit for somebody like Cisco? You know, something that makes a difference to the bottom line. I'll park the second question for now. Does anybody think that that kind of a business unit can make a difference at a company like Cisco?
Yeah, I think that the average PO size for something like a managed OpenStack offering can be significant. They have an entire sales team dedicated around selling the Meta Cloud, you know, the Meta Cloud services. That's been pretty successful. I mean, when I was at Cisco, I mean, I saw numerous POs of sizable amounts come in for that product. And, you know, I know the one sales rep out of LA that was like, I can't talk to people unless it's a certain level because I just got too much business to sell. You know, I can't waste time on, you know, a $100,000 deal when $1 million deals are all over the place.
Wow, I am surprised.
For me personally, I've had this discussion with several people in this space. I think the managed OpenStack model is probably the most profitable engagement mechanism you can do in the OpenStack space right now, is bringing that type of service in-house to large enterprises who don't have the don't have the skill set or time and effort to do it. And Cisco can actually capture revenue on multiple streams. Not only can they get it on the Metapod software service, managed service,
but also from the hardware component that they can package along with it.
All right, fair enough. The second question that I had, right, was in the wider cloud space, right? So we've got AWS and Microsoft Azure, IBM SoftLayer, maybe DigitalOcean, people like that, right? We're maybe not all convinced that Cisco can make a play into that space, but they're obviously still got at least some intention to, right? How many people can actually sit in that space before it's like, you know what, we've already got the players there and there's no more oxygen for anybody else? Or are we already at that point?
When will Oracle do it? Next week?
Oh.
They're ramping up.
In the next 10 years, we know that much.
Yeah, they'll be number one. That's right.
I think that there's space, right? And as we've talked about many times on this podcast, different clouds are useful for different things. So I think that also makes a difference.
I mean, I get that, right? So maybe it's more than where I dabble and what I see, right? But I see it very much at the moment as, on the one side, there's Amazon Web Services and probably DigitalOcean as like the cool kind of funky born in the cloud stuff. And then there's Microsoft Azure and maybe IBM SoftLayer. And I was just kind of thinking that, you know, two big players in both of those types of clouds, any more than that and you start to get crowded. I don't see many more people competing in that kind of AWS side of things. Yeah, we've talked about Oracle. Obviously, want to compete on the more kind of enterprise-focused side. But if Cisco are as well, suddenly we're talking about four potential big players there. And I don't know if there's enough to go around there. It's only personal opinion, right? But I don't know. I wonder.
If it'll generate a profit, they'll do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back to the clicker thing, you know, it's not just that it'll work with Cisco's cloud. Like, it'll work with AWS. It'll work with other things, too. So I don't know that they're planning on...
But what's in that for Cisco, then? Is it like license based or something?
Yes. I don't know. It integrates really well with the ACI, so you know it gets us in to tell the ACI story too.
And I also think it'll start to eventually dovetail into, or maybe even supplant in some respects, UCS Director. You know, because it's an application packaging exercise to make cloud provisioning very seamless, click based. When you see a demo of it, you're like, oh wow, I totally get that. That makes sense.
It's pretty.
It is very pretty, and we all know how pretty Cisco's UI are. All 50 of them.
it'll be our first pretty UI.
So are we saying we're speculating here, right? Do we expect Cisco's acquisition here to be somewhat different to the way we interpreted Oracle's acquisition of Revelo last week? Because I'm pretty sure we said that, you know, Revelo used to play well with AWS and everybody else. And we anticipate that now that it's under Big Red, that it's just going to work with Big Red. But we're saying that we think that here, Clicker will, going forward, probably continue to work with other cloud providers, and we don't expect Cisco to say, boom, Cisco cloud only.
You compare Oracle and Cisco, and yeah, Cisco's not completely open about everything, but they're certainly more open than Oracle is. I think if you're looking at the philosophy of the products and interoperability, and well, I say that, I don't know. maybe I'm just blowing smoke. I just think it's more likely for Cisco to continue to maintain current market status than I think Oracle will. When Oracle buys something, you know, they try to make it, you know, Oracle Core.
Yeah. Can I say they're both ugly, but Oracle is much, much, much minginer, much, much more ugly. Does that, is that
I was going to say Cisco's a lot nicer. Cisco's a lot more, like, you know, big picture friendly. I mean, it's going to integrate a little bit better with, I think, with what people want to do without hard changes and choices. I just think Oracle's got that, like a real strong kind of expensive.
Screw the customer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Take the money. See your enemies driven before you.
Hey, so there's maybe a segue, right? Talking about Cisco being more open to the big picture and stuff like that. They're partnering with SpringPath, right, on this HyperFlex thing, okay? Which seems to have Nutanix in the crosshairs. I'm not sure what it says to their existing partnership with SimpliVity and maybe to the longevity of the SimpliVity business. I don't know. I'm speculating there, right? But one thing that I do wonder is surely this time around, Cisco have got to stick with this one and not just throw it away after a while, because they seem to be getting this reputation of, like, partnering with everybody under the sun and then, like, you know, making a big announcement about it and, oh, this is the direction we're going to go, and then yeah, we kind of forget about it and go somewhere else later. But there's this let's be big picture friendly and what have you, but then there's be let's be big picture friendly, where they're like a bit too friendly with everybody, and they seem to lack a little bit of direction sometimes. I think
for me it's like it's a travel brochure to go to Switzerland, but then when you get there it's East Germany.
Whoa, I like that. I think
the hell.
Whoa. I've always said that the hyper-converged
thing, any of our listeners.
Yeah. We apologize to all Central European German influence listeners. You know, here's the deal. I've always thought that the hyper-converged space needs a clear leader from the ecosystem, big names, right? I've always been very worried about it in a sense, right? So I like the Nutanixes, the SimpliVities, the Maxes, the Scales, and the ones I haven't mentioned. But, you know, do we have, like, the Ciscos and the EMCs, and we're starting to see that, right, come out with an offering that's going to, first of all, go head-to-head, but also validate it. Now we've got two. I think that's finally happening.
No, I would agree there as well. And here's kind of the way I look at it, right? This is not a very compelling offer compared to the other leaders in the space. You look at what Nutanix can offer, you look at what SimpliVity can offer in terms of a product that's scalability, that has rich data services, that has features that trump what, you know, what has been offered right now on its face from this SpringPath Cisco box, the Flex HyperFlex. But is it good enough for them to go in and compete in some respects with that customer set that wants to adopt HCI? Probably. Does Cisco have a very large channel organization that they can expand on and leverage to get a lot of these units out the door? Definitely. Is it priced at a price point that is compelling compared to the premium you're going to pay for a Nutanix or SimpliVity? Most certainly. And in that respect, the timing could not be better, actually, for Cisco to release an HCI product, because what we see right now is both the two major players, SimpliVity and Nutanix, having taken D rounds of significant size, having taken, you know, a combined $600 million in VC funds. We're seeing an economic downturn or a lot of question marks around the economy. You see the VCs basically closing their pocketbooks and tightening their belts. And you see an IPO market that just simply does not exist anymore. What better time to bring a product to market where you can weather the storm and all of those market forces and then undercut your competitors' price point because you have 52,000 other products that can make a profit and you can take a loss on the initial release.
I bet on Cisco for success in this space. I just really think that they've got everything right to everything you said, Gabe. And yeah, I mean, I think it's a real safe bet. I'm in Vegas, so that's okay to bet this week.
I don't know that I really agree with that personally, that they've floundered so often when they've gone outside of, like, their core businesses. I mean, I don't just mean like those flip cameras and stuff like that, but, you know, every foray they've made into the storage space has been like, dope, that has not worked out.
They did pretty freaking well with servers.
Oh, absolutely. No, yeah. That's a fair shout. Yeah.
And also, this is another way for them to sell more servers and more switch ports. I mean, the one thing in their pocket is, hey, none of the hyper-converged guys know networking worth a damn. Well, they don't do that part really well. Here's a compelling offer that comes with the switches. Heck, you just turn it on and run with it. That's in and of itself. You're mixing good margin server with really high margin switches coming in at a price point where you're still going to make money. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer in a certain respect. The limitations right now are the scale of the systems and, you know, the additional features on top of it. But I think it's fine for a lot of customers that might want to get their toes wet. But it's definitely not going to be like any, you know, massive deployments the way you see with the leaders in the space. And then, of course, you know, now we have
I don't know. It might not take long, right? I mean, the kinds of accounts that Cisco has, you know, if there's just a little bit of validation and, you know, I suspect they have been testing the solution, right? I don't want to ask for inside information, Lauren, but this is not like brand new stuff. This is stuff that I'm sure has been running in pretty good size accounts already.
Yeah, Cisco's invested in these guys at other points, and then there's probably a right to buy clause in the contract of this OEM relationship that they have. Cisco's making every intention that they're going to purchase this outright and control the entirety of it. The beauty of it is that, unlike the SimpliVity relationship, where that's a channel meet in the middle strategy where a partner has to come in to kind of broker the deal, this one, the internal Cisco sales teams get comped on the whole thing. That in and of itself is going to take the entire Cisco PSS data center sales group, and they're just like, hey, new product, new thing. I can position, I can put it in all the places, I'll sell the hell out of it. I think that they will catch up rather quickly in terms of raw sales capability, regardless of their missteps in the storage space in the past.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. If Cisco turns it on by compensating its sales force to go after it, you know, it's like, you will get these bonus, you will get these kickers. You know, that can make a big difference. A lot of money to invest.
Is it something their Salesforce understands, though, as a market?
Some of them do and some of them don't. So
wait
keep
a minute.
In mind,
let's ask Lauren that question.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, I'm keeping quiet. I think Gabe actually has way more information on this, having been
I don't think so. Come on, Lauren.
Cisco employee.
You're holding out on us.
I will say the things Lauren wants to say.
I don't know anything about sales. I just write blogs.
That's it? Just write blogs?
Yep.
So think
Cisco
about
will figure out how to sell it. Of course they will, because first of all, they've got its server sales team with UCS, which is killing it, right? So they're doing something right in that space. And honestly, you could even look at it as an objection handling answer, you know, for the situations where, you know, existing HCI players have come up and, you know, maybe they lost a deal or such, but or they have a complement, maybe a robo strategy, whatever you want to do. I think that the broader, bigger Cisco team, I don't think they're going to have any issue with this. I just think that Cisco's going to nail it.
There was talk about, you know, potentially this leading to an acquisition, right? Now, Crunchbase, I'm actually quite surprised at this. I don't know if they're missing something or what, but Crunchbase is showing SpringPath is just one round of funding from 4 years ago of $34 million. Now,
it's a mistake. There's Cisco was part of their C round, and that brought them to a total of $34 million.
But you're saying even on this round that Cisco, you're saying were involved in, or did you say they led? I don't know. But you're saying that's taken them up to $34 million.
The way I understand it, that was the total that they've taken was up to $34 million.
Okay, because that's like not a lot of cash in 4 years compared to some companies that, burn through a lot more than that. So,
you know, they just introduced that product to market. I can't think they had more than 50 customers.
Right.
You know, when they started, that basically when Cisco knocked on the door, because remember there's an article a while back, a couple months ago, when their PR agency disappeared and all these things, like,
yeah,
they totally went dark. Right, so that was essentially, it's like, the deal's done. You guys need to sit on this while we product and package it and get it ready for launch. You know, we'll keep paying you and just hold tight, then we're going to unleash the hounds.
Yeah, I do remember that. Hey, on a bit of a tangent, obviously Dell is pretty well embedded with Nutanix, right? And we talked about there isn't like one of the, big players entrenched in this hyper-converged market. Would that... Actually, I was going to say, would that potentially force Dell's hand to make an acquisition of Nutanix? But where the hell would they get the cash from to do something like that? Could this be interesting for Dell? I suppose they may be getting VMware as part of the MC.
I think Dell waits for another 12 months for what I would foresee to be possibly the inevitable
bottoming
readjustment
out
or realignment for some of these players. If Nutanix can't get that IPO to go, and if you're a company with 1,400 people and you're doing roughly $300 million in run rate business, do the math.
Yeah.
You know, you're well above your run rate. You know, it very well could be that, you know, they're knocking it out of the park, but because they're not public, we can't see their numbers, and the S-1 filing and stuff they had was back in October. So it's hard to really kind of guess how well they're doing and whatnot. It's a bad market to IPO. I mean, you can never time it quite well, but right now it's especially bad.
I just don't see that happening because of the economic situation that Dell is in.
No.
I
cannot see it.
The thing is, they really don't need it. No, they don't need to own it. They can continue to OEM it. You know, Cisco's not going to stop the relationship with SimpliVity. Hell, they moved 1,000 UCS nodes last year, or in three quarters. They're not going to turn away that business, even if it does compete with them on some angles. Just the way that Dell's not going to turn away the Nutanix business in the short term, even though they will eventually own VxFail.
Hey.
No.
Below the belt.
They got to stop putting RHEL in their names.
Hey, speaking of Chad, I didn't see his name on the list of people that's going to run the new Dell EMC business. I was a bit sad about that.
He's running VCE now.
He is, you're right.
Running
VCE.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I was kind of expecting him to run Dell itself.
Oh, right.
Not
that,
yet.
That list, that was like a honky town list. It was like all white dudes.
Is that right?
Not a lot of diversity.
Whoa, let's look at this. No, let's do this.
There's one woman and then one Indian guy and everybody else.
Yes, yes.
David Golden,
white guy.
Yep, Jeremy Burton, David Golden. They were the two big ones that I'd noticed.
Bill Scannell coming in, white guy. Who's going out?
I don't know how you go from chief marketing officer to chief, like, support happy person officer. What was the one role
customer
in
customer experience, was it?
Oh, boy.
Oh yeah, so Jeremy Burton is taking over for Karen Quintos, or Quintos, however you pronounce it. Quintos, is that Quintos? Yeah, so Dell CMO. So a white guy's taking over. I don't know if she's white or Hispanic. Looks like a Hispanic name. I don't know.
Karen. Patriarchy.
Well, she's a woman, though, so she probably wasn't doing a great job.
Oh, God, no.
You are going to get Shanley after us.
Yeah. I mean, so there it is. White guy coming in to replace a woman. Yeah.
God, this is all the last thing that anybody ever wants to hear about.
Oh, I know.
All the white guys that listen to it.
But it came up, right? We might as well go for it.
Well, no, I mean, the only reason I noticed it is because, like, diversity has been such a big push. I mean, you look at the Cisco rearrangement or realignment of their senior staff. That was very much at the forefront of their discussion. It was like, we tried to go after young and old, diverse viewpoints, and a lot of people from varying backgrounds to kind of go forward with the new face of Cisco. And then you look at the Dell EMC thing, and it's the old boys club.
Hey, so I'm totally just...
I was waiting for them to ask me. You know, I'm a twofer.
Yeah, good luck for that.
Twofer.
Not this time.
Hey, you know...
You're a threefer if you count the hair, because the hair gives you a whole new diverse... A new diversity element, right?
A new dimension.
Am I missing something with your hair?
You're a 2.5-er.
No, the hair is all about Nigel.
Oh, yeah.
Short and blonde, I guess.
Oh, right, yeah. Do you reckon Dell are getting away with this because they're a private company and that they're not under the kind of same pressures for equal opportunities and the like?
They're not getting away with anything. They're just they're bringing the people in that they want to bring in to run this, and it's a calculated effort. But I just found it kind of interesting that it was kind of like, you know, it was the good old boys club, and everybody wanted to focus on Tucci not being there. I'm like, dude, he's been trying to get out for years.
Yeah.
So you've got a good old boys club from Dell and a good old boys club from EMC, right?
That's like the old fashioned and the Rob Roy mix. It's like a board meeting where they bring out the old guy drinks. I'm one to talk. I love a Manhattan.
Have you had one today?
No, I haven't. Stuffy boardroom with cigars, and servants. Remember what was the movie Trading Places?
There we go.
That's I imagine the boardroom. It's like,
at least that had Eddie Murphy.
Oh yeah,
yes,
yeah.
It did.
We don't have anybody trading places like that here. Well, maybe Karen. Karen's on the way out.
God, scratch this entire part of the show.
Oh no, I'm gonna edit the out of this and amplify it up. Diversity at Dell EMC.
I've got all downloads. Hey, being on slightly more boring stuff though, but on the same topic, I actually thought it was kind of interesting that the new chief marketing officer, so the guy that's like in charge of branding and marketing and all that kind of stuff, plus the new guy that's president of the Enterprise Servers and Storage Group and all that kind of jazz. Both of those come from EMC, which I thought was kind of interesting. Are we going to see like a more bullish Dell that kind of is a bit more like EMC from the past? Because I don't know, the EMC have always been so like loud and brash and what have you. Are we going to see that from Dell? In fact, actually, can Dell afford to market the way that EMC did with all of their, like, you know, race cars jumping over lorries and stuff like that at product announcements?
Yeah, but they're going to be doing it with Razor scooters instead.
I don't know. They're going to use Quantum Leap to go back in time to rob a bank to pay for it. That's how they're going to close the deal.
They're going to do it all on roller skates with gas-powered roller skates, not trucks and cars.
It's a Quantum Leap, which was a show about a guy who went back in time to fix
it. I know it, yeah. Like that, do you?
Yeah. This is the encyclopedia of sci-fi. You cannot get Quantum Leap past Nigel.
I'm just going to ask Ziggy.
Was that ever a game show? That theme sounded like one.
Did it?
That was very Match Game.
Is that right? Oh, I
don't know. But now we got to... Hey, whoever editing this, please find the Quantum Leap theme song so we can
that
superimpose
it
over.
There you go. Thank you.
You are not doing Scott Blackula any services.
So I think, did we talk about a week or so ago? I think Martin Casado, leaving VMware for a venture capitalist, and now we've got Carl Eschenbach. Is it Eschenbach?
Carl Eschenbach.
Yeah. Yeah. Is
the
this
last
a trend?
Of the last of the VMware holdout.
Yeah. So
last of the old guard.
The CFO left at the end of January too.
So are people bailing on VMware, like, big style now? I mean, don't get me wrong. I know that, like, these people have been there for a long time, and they've actually done amazing stuff while at VMware, and maybe it was just time to move on. But it really does seem like, you know, people, well, you could look at it as people bailing, and maybe it's to do with the Dell deal.
And
seems like that to me.
Right? You look at this deal, you look at how screwed up it is and how screwed they're getting. You know, why even bother sticking around?
Yeah.
You've just been shafted royally. All this hard work you've done for so long, you like raised the whole industry, and this is where you end up?
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be kidding me.
Well, I think that's really well said, Mark. They really have raised the industry over the last 12, 15 years.
Yeah, my favorite quote. I look at this audience, and I look at the VMware and the brand reputation we have in the enterprise, and I find it really hard to believe that we cannot collectively beat a company that sells books.
Hey, is it sad, the state of VMware at the moment?
I mean, I don't think it's sad. I just think that it's, you know, this.
Let's just say your upside is limited.
What do you mean?
I think they've made a lot of. What I think that they've done is they've chased a lot of dragons, and none of them have really panned out really big for them. And so it looks like they have a lot of past success, or their glory days are behind them. And now they're grasping at straws. And as such, you know, they're getting eclipsed a little bit by the new hotness, you know, Docker and, you know, OpenStack
cloud
and some of these
and
other
stuff.
Cloud and hybridity.
And they're in the midst of this cluster freak with Dell and EMC, right?
Through no fault of their own.
It's like, are you kidding me? You know, you wake up in the morning, you think, oh, I get to deal with this crap again.
Yeah.
It's like you wake up with an extra head all of a sudden. It's not your. It's not like a clone of your head. It's like somebody else's head, and it's somebody you don't like, and you're like, oh, no. I can't really just cut it off right away. I kind of have to play this out because it's kind of new and unique.
But, don't want to bleed out.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you're like, just not super wild about having a new head.
I don't know. I'm just like... I'm all for change and all that kind of stuff, and I know we all are, and everybody should be, and businesses should be, and everybody needs to be, all that kind of jazz, right? But I kind of grew up on VMware, and it was my company that I first had my, like, big aha moment with, as in, like, you know, I was, like, first saw VMware. I'm like, you know, I totally get how this can change the IT world, and I've
Nigel,
seen it.
You are way older than that company.
I
kind of grew up with VMware. I've been around a lot longer than that.
No,
I think he's right though. There's kind of a, this is not your father's VMware, right? This is not the VMware we all kind of came to market with and cut our teeth. if we go back to 2005 through 2010 or 2011, that VMware isn't recognizable as what it is.
Yeah, the Diane Greene and Paul Moritz VMware got taken over by the Pat Gelsinger VMware, which is another element of this. It's not only Dell EMC, it's working for freaking Pat, which none of these guys like, but they're not going to say it.
And Pat's got a seat on the new board in the new Dell team of execs, so, yeah.
If Pat was able to get loyalty from his team, he would be getting some more of these people to stick around. The fact is they're all cashing in.
Yeah.
No, but it's also East meets West, right? It's a very much an EMC, East Coast business mentality meeting the West Coast Valley mentality. And in this case, the East had more money and kind of won out.
Yeah, but Pat's an Intel guy. That's as West Coast as you can get.
Dun, 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 dun.
Right. Hey, yeah, the audio icon for Intel.
Oh, yeah, so it is. I missed that.
It was better. When you said East meets West, I wanted to say ding, diddling, ding, 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 ding.
While we insult our entire Asian audience, it was really bad.
We've insulted everybody else over the last
just
few
do that? Did I miss that?
Should we talk about Donald Trump now?
Do we need to play a Hong Kong Kui, a Hong Kong Fui commercial now?
Oh, dear. Oh,
number one super guy.
Cut all of this.
So we either go with a 5-minute podcast or we go with a full length episode and we have no listeners next week.
Or more listeners. We need to be more abrasive.
Yeah.
If we insult everybody, then we can always say, hey, we insulted everybody. Nobody left unscathed.
And you guys might find yourselves banned from traveling outside of the States, and I might be banned from traveling into the States. Yeah.
I'm on the Social Justice Warriors watch list. Me and Donald Trump are both on it.
You've got a ways to go.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I do. But I am looking for a new host country. Just in case.
That's a good idea.
All right, let's reel this back in and get back to tech.
So, thinking forward, cloud, containers, all this cool stuff. Man, we're all about to be blown away by 32 gigabits per second fiber channel. And apparently, right, it is all about these new all flash arrays. So actually, no, to be fair, right, it didn't cite the source of the number or anything like that. But apparently Brocade is saying that between 80% of all flash arrays are fiber channel connected.
Yeah, I believe that completely.
Stick that in your pipe, eh?
No, I mean, you look at, and so, I mean, the funny thing is back in 2012 when I worked at Emulex, that was a whole story we were talking up around 16 gig fiber channel adoption because they changed the encoding scheme from 810 to 6466. And it was just orders of magnitude better performance and half the latency. And so you probably won't get that same kind of experience in terms of latency or IOPS per second with 32 gig because there's really not a lot of fundamental changes, but your bandwidth ratios will go up significantly from 16 to 32.
Are they going to be able to use the bandwidth?
Flash, yeah, but for all flash, I mean, you look at, not this applies to DSSD, but something like that. If you start to look at NVMe-based architectures and they start to roll out here in the near future, then you can definitely start to push some of that throughput, right? But it just depends on how they want to connect these things and, who comes to market with a product like that. I mean, I think there is somewhat of a little market for 32 gig. I just think that, 16 gig in and of itself has struggled a little bit to gain widespread adoption. It's not like 10 gig Ethernet where, every server comes with a port. You have to purposely go out and pick a fiber channel medium to come in there. And funnily enough, you still see plenty of shops that have 4 gig in place and 8 gig.
So where are people going to implement this? It's got to be just a core technology.
I think in the very beginning, it becomes a core technology. I'll be curious to see the switch ecosystem looks like, what the HBAs are priced at. You're targeting, in a lot of fiber channel sales, or the bulk majority of it, goes into the actual array manufacturers themselves. So Emulex and QLogic both have these arms dedicated to doing design wins for the various storage products that are out there. So you get a design win with with Pure Storage, you get one with Violin, you get one with, a SolidFire or a NetApp or anybody else who's putting an all-flash product on the market.
So I thought all of these like new technologies like NVMe and stuff like that were going to go for different, more modern, well, not necessarily more modern, but different, more low latency interconnects like PCIe and stuff like that extended outside of the chassis and what have you. I really didn't think fiber channel. No, I get that, but these kind of, at least the uber fast all-flash arrays aren't necessarily general purpose, are they? That have like 1,000 hosts connected into them and what have you. So you can go for like more limited interconnects, I would have thought. That was just, that's my understanding of where I thought it was going.
I mean, I think if you start to position it for, you know, obviously entry to the market, they're making the announcement now. You got time before it actually starts to get any traction or adoption. And then you start to look at some of the upcoming technologies, 3D Crosspoint, some of these other things, and how it's all about positioning yourself for the next generation of things that are being built. So it's a domino effect that also gets to take advantage of, you know, CPU architectures that are coming out and changing. And there's a lot of stuff that goes into the design structure for some of these things, and they're very tightly aligned to the, you know, the Intel release cycle and the changes that come in accordance with those architectures as well. There's a lot of moving pieces involved here into why a company decides to go to the next generation interconnect or fabric, you know, because 128 will come out as well at some point down the future, and there'll be, you know, products that it's going to adopt very early that will be fairly nascent, but then there's the longer chain of things that will adopt and gain traction for. Nobody wants to keep around a bunch of 4 gig optics and, you know, product that they don't even manufacture anymore.
Hey, sorry, Gabe.
Did you say 128?
That's what I was going to ask. Did I switch off? Yeah. You're talking about 128 gigabits per second.
That's the next one, yeah. After 32, it's 128.
What?
They're skipping 64?
Yeah, they've missed 64. It.
No, they've never had 64 on the roadmap, to the best of my knowledge. We were talking about the 128 roadmap back in 2011, 2012.
Get me some of them. Flipping heck.
Hey, now.
Hey. So go on then, let's wrap the show up with Hot or Not, and the microphone is over to you for this one, Lauren, because you've got a little something for us.
Oh, thanks, Nigel. Samsung is coming out with a smart belt, which they are dubbing WELT. That's right, W-E-L-T, WELT. It tracks waist size and, you know, things like activity levels and all that good stuff. So
wait a minute.
You know,
let's tracks waist size.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, fatty, put down the donut.
That's a little different than just like using another hole.
It's like, yeah, exactly, hey, yeah. Buddy, lay off the sauce.
Hey, where does the name WELT come from, by the way?
It's a hilarious name for something used to create welts on children with.
Oh
yeah, I was about to say, it's like, why didn't they call it the Samsung Switch?
Go pick slaves. Yeah,
exactly. Ass beat with it. It leaves a welt. Yeah, you know, mom and dad always
total
says, like,
corporal
pick a
punishment belt. Product.
Yeah.
Go get a belt because I'm gonna whip your ass with it.
Maybe it's a motivational tool. Yeah, you gain a little weight and you
it
have
shocks
to
you.
do some back welting.
We've had a good giggle about it, but Lauren, I still haven't got a clue what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, so basically, it's just another activity monitor slash. Health recorder type of thing. So, Mark, you tell us, what do you think, hot or not?
Oh, yeah, this is hot. This is so hot.
How much does it retail for? That's going to influence my decision.
Let's see.
Because I don't want to pay a lot of money for somebody to tell me to lay off the donut.
Do I have to charge my belt?
Oh, that's a good point.
Mean, here's another damn thing I got to charge. At some point, it's like I need just a wall of charger sockets.
No, it sucks energy right out of your skin around your waist.
No, it definitely has a charger. I see.
It's powered by your own fat.
Oh, then it's not hot. Without a charger, hot. With charger, not.
Completely. I think useless. It might be magnetic, though, if that helps at all.
Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, you don't have to have the shame of having the belt loops that you've kind of expanded on, right? So, you know, we all have a belt that's got, like, that little crease in it from where it was like, oh, look, you used to have a nice thin waist. Now you have a fat waist because you're at the last loop. So it's got a magnetic connector, and it kind of, like, always adapts. You never have belt loop shame.
Hey, does that mean, like, you know, when you go out for lunch and sometimes you overindulge and you're like, man, I'm going to have to unloosen the belt. Does it just kind of slide?
No, yeah, it's got loops.
And significant other will be able to track that online.
Yeah. Hey, actually, there you go. So if you're taking your belt off in the middle of the day in the office and there's your significant other could be alerted to that and be like, extramarital activities there?
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Why are you taking your belt off?
What if you're going to the bathroom?
No, it's true. Yeah, it's true.
Oh,
maybe
it tracks it for the amount of time the belt is off.
Yeah, yeah.
Horrible
idea. Were you
idea.
Going to the bathroom or were you having extramarital sex? Your belt was off for an hour.
Your belt was off for 5 minutes. Were you going to the bathroom? Or
your belt just paired with somebody else's.
And then it shows that you were getting struck by it. Or someone was getting struck by the damn thing.
It happens.
It does.
It needs a camera.
It does not need a camera.
No, that makes it not hot.
A belt with camera.
Don't give me any ideas.
Is there an app for it?
I am not finding anything on cost. I don't think they've released anything on cost yet.
Okay, no sweat.
They're probably $7,000.
Who thinks of this?
That's all.
Who thinks of the belt? They
apparently unveiled it at the CES conference.
So this was not like an acquisition. No, this was not. Some startup didn't come up with this.
Somebody in a lab came up, hey, man, we need more belts that can track our stuff. Yeah. Let's go throw $5 or $6 million at developing that.
What's the best wearable technology? Well, there's a watch out there. How about if we come out with, I know, underwear?
I'm going to say not hot, right? Because I don't want to pay money for something that tells me I'm getting fatter or whatever when I can totally find out myself by the fact that I need to move to a new hole on my normal belt. True story here, right? In the past, I have had to drill a hole in a belt because I bought kind of the wrong size and I was already on like the biggest size it would do. No, actually, I was on the smallest size it would do and I lost a bit more weight and I couldn't take it down anymore. So I had to drill a hole in. True story. Why would I want to pay? I mean,
you couldn't afford 10 quid for a new belt?
No.
You know, the belt that really looks bad is the one where you sew new leather onto the end.
Speaking from experience.
It's a different color leather.
It looks really bad when it's that braided belt and it goes to plain leather.
So no, not hot for me.
Dude, do you remember, wait, real quick, tangent here, but do you remember there was a time when like the braided belt was totally in and it was always like super long and you tucked it
down? My
dad
still thinks it's in.
Oh my God. It was like the most horrible time to own a belt. Leather braided belts that were like 4 feet two extra long and you like tied them in a knot around your waist or some stupid. It's like the 80s or 90s bad.
You didn't
fashion.
Have to worry about extra holes though.
Yeah, you could be tied it in a knot.
Holes aplenty.
Holes all the way through it, yeah.
It's Do you think it just comes out with a braided smart belt.
it's so not. I don't even think we even need to vote. Yeah, nobody's going to buy this belt.
I think they're entirely missing the female demographic with this belt as well, so that cuts out half, too.
Why are they missing the female demographic with this?
Girls don't wear belts.
They do.
Well, no, it's just like a really thick, like, manly belt.
That doesn't... Okay, where you insult them. You don't wear belts.
No, unless they come out with like the Michelle Obama version of that belt, where it's like the one that fits right under your boobs, and it's like way high. What?
Oh God, where?
You get her to endorse it, right? Yeah, you see those belts you wore.
She is behind exercise. No, she's big on exercise and fitness.
Dude, I'd have her getting out there with a giant, Michelle Obama belt.
Yeah, that might go, but this is a Korean company, Samsung, so she's not going there.
Otherwise, get a belt of Marcos.
She should turn some of her
shoes
into belts.
She's also Filipino. Hey.
She's already in the lady. Smart shoe market.
She's already cornered the smart shoe market. You millennials will have to Google most of this shit.